Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And good afternoon and welcome. Welcome, everyone. Well, I'm certainly ready for my first guest today because I've had one of those mornings. You know what they're like. You get up and you think your day or your week is going to go a certain way. And absolutely nothing has gone according to plan so far. But I'm glad to say that my guest is with me on the line, Dr. Michael Wayne. I'll introduce him properly in just a moment. And Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum was supposed to join us around 12:30 today, and she had an emergency. And so we've kind of flip-flopped things around, and what I was going to play to you next week was a pre-recorded interview with Julie Ziegler-Norman, who's Zig Ziegler's daughter. They're going to talk. She talks about how things changed after her dad had his fall, and you know, you don't always anticipate these things coming, of course, but they've certainly made the most of the situation. It left him with a little brain damage and a severe memory loss. But you know that Zig Ziglar still travels the country giving talks with the aid of his daughter, so he's doing it in Zig Ziglar style, and we'll be talking about that around 12:30. Embrace the struggle. But first, I'm very pleased to have with me Dr. Michael Wayne. He wants us to know that living a high-density lifestyle has dangers. But not to worry, because Dr. Wayne has developed a 12-step plan that can help us get on the low-density path. And Dr. Michael Wayne has been practicing integrative medicine, Chinese medicine, and acupuncture for 25 years. He has a PhD in quantum integral medicine and is a licensed acupuncturist in New York and California. He's also a board-certified Chinese herbalist. Dr. Michael Wayne, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Vicki.
I'm very pleased to have you. It's a great program that you've put together. First of all, I have to ask you, you have a PhD in quantum integral medicine. Tell me what that means.
Well, I could talk the whole show just about that, but what it was, and a lot of it came out of my clinical practice, was trying to understand what held people back from the healing process. And so I wrote this book. It's more of a research-oriented book, just saying that, one, our modern form of medicine, our biomedicine, is way off the mark and doesn't really take into account some of the new sciences like quantum physics. And so I really wrote trying to support the understanding of how quantum physics and medicine work together to really show an integrative, holistic approach that can really tap into the healing system. Mm-hmm. So, in a nutshell, that's what it is. And this book and the concept of low-density lifestyle is really somewhat of an offshoot of that, and something where I've tried to make it as practical and easy to understand as possible for people.
Yeah, and I should say that you don't have a book about the low-density lifestyle right now, but you are working on it, and it will be out soon. But we're here to talk about the program itself, the concept itself.
And I do have a website, so people can always go to the website, the lowdensitylifestyle.com website.
Right. Right. So with all the knowledge that we have today and the options of traditional and alternative practices, you'd think we'd be a really super fit a nation. But collectively, we seem to be getting unhealthier on many levels. So what do you think is going on with us as a society?
Well, I think a lot of it, and I see so much of my clinical practices, and you're right that there's more information about health, but people are just their lives are feeling that, or they just feel overwhelmed. They're just stressed. They're just burning the candle at both ends. And so the amount of taxation on the body, the mind, the spirit is just overburdening for so many people. Some people adopt unhealthy behaviors because of it, which will also cause unhealth. And some people just what that does to the body is just not good.
Yeah, and you know, I've noticed a lot when I'm talking with people, friends, family, they say, I don't know what's wrong with me, I just have no energy these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm talking about people with no known disease and who are, you know, for all intents and purposes, appearing fit. And it's just, there seems to be this low energy or apathy almost around.
Yeah. So I've called that a high-density lifestyle, to try and kind of pin it down to an easy-to-understand term, but it really is. It's just people feeling the burdens of stress and feeling overwhelmed, and they just feel heavy. Their body, their mind, their spirit is just tense, rigid, and it's people get stuck in it, like a treadmill, and they just stay in that way and can't get themselves off.
Yeah, and I've been observing, actually, since I've been reading about the high-density lifestyle and the low-density lifestyle. I've been looking at people, and you say that if somebody is living a high-density lifestyle, it's often apparent because they seem heavy, and you're not necessarily talking about weight or body proportions. You're talking just about this general heaviness that they have.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost, you know, the old saying, someone has a dark cloud over them. So it's somewhat like that. They're heavy. Mm. And it's interesting. When people see me in my private practice like that, who are really like extremely like that, I really try to tread lightly with them and not even try and say something funny just to lighten up the mood too quickly, because I don't want them to take things the wrong way.
Right, right.
So it's almost like their sense of humor is gone too. And when your sense of humor is gone, oh boy.
I know. Sense of humor is a big thing in my family, but I think we've all gone through phases where we definitely lost it for a while.
Yeah. There's talking about sense of humor. There's the famous story that was a best-selling book, Anatomy of an Illness by Norman Cousins,
yes,
where he wrote that it was a big part of his therapy was watching funny movies, and it cured him of a terminal illness.
Yes, yeah. You say in the material that I was reading that you estimate that about 90% of the population is living this way, living a high-density lifestyle. That seems extraordinarily high.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as I was thinking, well, what is the percentage of the population? And I'm convinced that I would say if we look back maybe 20 years, maybe 10 years, we would have said 75%, 20, 30, 40 years, 50% or less. But it's just the pace is just getting faster. And I mean, I'm a technology fan, but certain things about technology just kind of also put people in that high density mode too.
Mm.
So it's a high stress culture and society we live in.
Right. And we all know, I mean, we've heard many, many times about how that leads to disease or dis-ease, as some people like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at how people can decrease their density. Where do we even start? You've coined this term low density lifestyle.
So I tried to take the opposite approach, or say the opposite of a high-density lifestyle is a low-density lifestyle. And when people ask me what that is, what I say, I try to give them an analogy. I say, do you ever think about the time in your life when everything seemed to be going right, just right, and everything was flowing and you're clicking on all cylinders? And some people say, when I was on vacation or I was doing something passionate or I was listening to music. And I say that's great, but actually it's really a state of mind. It's not where you go to experience it. It's just where you are.
Right.
So it's really just feeling more relaxed, less stressed, and it allows you to be more clear and focused on an everyday basis. And that can really help a person be healthier, happier, have more fulfillment in their life, and I believe even more success in their life.
Yeah, I believe that too, because I think if you're stressed, you're definitely giving off vibes,
yeah,
that don't always work in your favor.
No.
You do say that our health isn't just about eating right and getting enough exercise. It's about much more than that.
Right, and I'll be the first one to say that eating right and exercising is very important. I would never want any of your listeners to think, oh, I don't have to worry about what I'm eating, but on top of that, I really believe that a lot of what I call the low-density lifestyle begins in the way we think in our mind and how much of a flexible thinker you are, or stubborn and dogmatic. And so I say, even if you eat the best diet in the world, if you do it out of rigid and kind of holier-than-thou sense, you may be doing more harm than good.
Right. We've got to enjoy where we're at.
Yeah. And again, don't you know, none of your listeners go out and eat a Big Mac and laugh through it. But, but yeah, you've got to find that right balance. But really, being more fluid and flexible in your mind and your body is really, when it comes down to the core concept I'm trying to put forth with a low-density lifestyle, that's really it, just being more fluid and flexible with everything you do.
Mm. Now, I know that you came up with 10 simple questions to determine if we're living a high-density lifestyle. So I'd like to look at those, but let's take a break first so I don't have to interrupt you. And you've also come up with a 12-step plan for us to move into a low-density lifestyle. So we'll take a look at that too when we come back. My guest is Dr. Michael Wayne, and you are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really? Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Dr. Michael Wayne. He has a PhD in quantum integral medicine, and he's the pioneer of the low-density lifestyle concept, and that's what we're talking about right now. So, Michael, you said there are 10 questions we need to ask ourselves to determine if we're living in a high-density state. And obviously we need to figure that out first and then look at how we can move into a low density state. But what are some of those questions we might want to ask ourselves?
Okay. Well, actually I wrote these as what I call 10 signs. So 10 questions, 10 signs. And I don't know if I'll get a chance to read all of them.
Let's just say the top.
Take a couple of them. And they're actually a little bit humorous. So I say one of the signs that you're living a high density lifestyle is that when you leave the driveway of your house in the morning, it looks like a chase scene from your favorite police show. Then I say another one, the space around your lounge chair at your kid's soccer, hockey, or baseball games looks like the desk at your office. Another one, you pray for red lights because you figure that waiting at the light is a great time to get some business done.
Oh no, I've been there.
and I'll give another one. You find sitting for anywhere beyond 5 minutes is a great time to get into REM state. So, I mean, we laugh, but it's the amount of people having just say sleeplessness issues is just, I mean, that's, you know, it gets astounding at times.
I know. I was actually working on a project a couple of months ago down in Portland, and this fellow, I won't name him, had disappeared. Nobody could find him, and we needed him for the segment that we were producing. It was for a television show. And then his assistant comes out and said, I found him. He's asleep under somebody's desk. But he'd had no sleep for a couple of nights and was trying to catch some Z's there. But, you know, we laugh about it, like you said, but it's not really funny, is it, if we're living in that state?
Yeah. I'll give one more, or I can give all of them, but one more. And it's you've developed your own system of increasing muscle tone in your neck and shoulders without the benefits of working out. That's because that's the most common place people hold their stress is in their neck and shoulders.
Yeah. Sure sign when your shoulders are up around your ears. It's a sure sign to walk away from the computer or whatever you're working on. And so you developed this 12-step plan, and you know, we're all about taking action and resolving whatever's wrong with situations. So let's take a look at the 12-step plan and how that we can integrate that.
So I'll give a 12-step plan, and in case it sounds complicated for your listeners, then we can break it down even to what they can do as soon as possible.
Okay,
so,
sounds good.
So what I say, the 12-step plan, and a lot of things are known, and I just try to put it together in a way to help people live a wiser life. One, as I was saying before, just eating a healthy, whole foods-oriented diet. Second, which is tied in with diet, is just understand and put into practice how to truly take care of your health. And what I mean by that is just become more educated about your body so that you can be empowered and proactive in making your health choices and what you do.
Right, right.
Another one is be active and move, exercise, and especially in ways that accentuate the what I call the flow. So, you know, a lot of people cross-train, which is good. So, but besides the muscle strength things and aerobic things, doing things like yoga and things that really help the body ease into more flowing state. Another thing which we talked on before is being flexible of body and mind, and try to be aware of getting caught up in like rigid dogmatic thinking.
I think that's really, really important as people grow older, because they tend to get less flexible in their actions,
right?
And
yeah,
choices.
Yeah, that's so important. And I wrote a magazine article that'll come out in a couple of months, and I call it, and I coined this term, density intelligence, DQ. And I say, again, like the more dense your thinking is, the more tight you are, and the less dense, the more flexible you are.
Right.
Yeah. Another one is being mindful of your actions and reactions. And so you start being aware of how you react with people, and whether you're doing something that's reflexive and reactive. If someone says something to you, do you get real angry, or do you just take a breath, just realize, oh, yeah, okay, and just let it go?
Like this morning when I could have blown a fuse about two things that happened right in a row.
yeah, and I just went,
I'm not impressed.
yeah.
Not that I'm perfect. I do. I don't remember to do that all the time.
Yeah. So all of these things are really, as we go through this, are really to help encourage what I call the flow. I mean, when we talk, like in acupuncture, we always talk about energy and the chi and flowing. So this is really about how to undo the blocks in your life,
right,
your body, your mind.
Right.
So number six is carry yourself in integrity with everything you do and be authentic and real. Because the more you lie and not carry integrity, the more your body just starts getting into knots.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, it's true of everything, isn't it, Dr. Wayne?
Yeah.
You know, if we're working in a job that we really don't like, mm-hmm, and is against our beliefs.
I have
a friend who's working in the oil industry right now, and I can tell it's really affecting him because he doesn't like what's happening in certain aspects of his work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Another thing being just keeping a positive attitude about life and tending to your emotional well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Having an abundance mindset as opposed to a scarcity one. So meaning that instead of a scarcity mindset would be that it's every person for yourselves and you have to get yours before someone takes it from you, you'll realize there's enough to go around and share.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Another one is what we said before about humor. Don't have a good sense of humor and don't take yourself seriously. And that's where I was saying that I have to like tread lightly with some of my patients who I could see are really have intense high density, that I don't want to say something because they're taking themselves so seriously that I don't want to say something that will upset them.
Right.
You know, if I try to lighten the mood. And of course, you know, there's times for being irreverent and times for seriousness. But
right. And we have to figure those out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the 10th thing is using the creative powers of your mind, your creative intelligence, and that doesn't mean you have to be an artist, painter. It could be just thinking outside the box and being able to see solutions to problems that bog others down. And we all have a great innate creative thinking powers.
Yeah, and sometimes we just need to take that big pause, don't we?
Yeah,
and give ourselves some space to really think differently.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I have this weird habit I'll share with you, and it is weird, so listeners are really going to know I am weird now, but... If I can't find something, which happens very often, I'm one of those people who works on like 10 things at once, and I'll put something down and then I can't find it. And I've really looked and I really can't find it. I sometimes lie on the floor because they get a whole different perspective, and 9 times out of 10, I see it immediately.
Yeah, and that's really, you just change your perspective on things.
Yeah, and you do talk about that. I don't want to get sidetracked before we finish the 12, but you do talk about sometimes we just need to shake things up. Mm-hmm. And if we're right-handed, for example,
right,
you know, start brushing our teeth with our left hand.
Right. So that's what I was saying, what people, your listeners could take away with them and start doing every day is right. Just changing your routine is definitely something really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just two more. The last two is, and we just touched upon it just before, is doing work you love and feel passionate about. So we say do what you love. And the last thing is connecting to the spiritual dimension of life in whatever way that, however you define that, because feeling a connection to it, whether it's getting out in nature and feeling it there, or going to a religious institution, church, temple, but one way or another.
Mm. So do you find yourself, I know you practice yoga and mm-hmm. You're into Chinese medicine, you practice Chinese medicine and acupuncture, so you've been doing this for a long, long time, I know that, but do you still find yourself sometimes drifting into that high-density situation?
Well, nobody's perfect, so I'm not going to lie to you and say I'm Mr. Low-Density 100% of the time, but I think the key is to, and what I was saying before about being mindful is, catch yourself when it's happening. So like when we were joking before about the 10, you know, some of the signs, you know, like say
right.
leaving your house, it feels like a chase scene.
Right.
You know, if when you get caught up in it, you'll just get caught up, but hopefully you won't get caught up, or as soon as you're out of that, say, whoa, that's kind of ridiculous. What did I just do to myself? So
mm-hmm.
so that's really important when you're, and that's what I said, be mindful of your actions and reactions. So, you know, how you're responding.
Right.
Yeah, there are times we'll all feel overwhelmed, or there'll be just things, too many things happening at once, and that's when we have to say, well, where can I cut my losses, or where can I just take a break, or as you were saying, laying down and just staring at the ceiling, or just doing nothing.
Right, right. So, and you really believe that if we all practice this, we'd be in a much better spot.
I believe so. I mean, I don't know if the whole world's going to go that way, but if we get a nice number of people, if a minority of people that way, I think we'll probably live in a much more sane and peaceful world. Because, I mean, I think a number of reasons why people go at it and conflicts happen is just this high density. Everyone's just not understanding each other.
Right. Right. So what would you we're almost at the end of our segment now, but I want to ask you what you'd like to leave our listeners with today. What would you hope they'll take away, if nothing else?
Well, as I was saying, for people to easily start with, you know, after going through the 12 steps, is one, eating in terms of food, eating more vegetables, less animal foods, whole foods. And I would say go and turn on some music, let go, and just let the music move through you as a way to feel that flow. You know, doing the different routine instead of brushing your teeth with your left hand, if that's what you always do, do it with your right hand. And find time for quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
And also watch yourself if you're always saying no all the time. Someone asks you something and you're always saying, no, I can't do that, I can't do that. Try saying yes for a chance, for a change.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
And I would encourage people to look at my website, the www.lowdensitylifestyle.com. I have a wealth of articles on there on all different aspects of living a low-density lifestyle, and even a course they can sign up for if they're interested.
Yeah.
So people will find it really interesting because I post a new article on the website every day.
Okay. Well, it's a very useful website. You know, some websites are just fun to look at. This is very useful, too. And, yeah, I did notice you have a free 5-day e-course.
Right.
That if listeners are interested in, go ahead to www.lowdensitylifestyle.com. And Dr. Michael Wayne has a ton of information up there to get you into that low-density frame. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you very much, Vicki. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, and you have to let me know when your book comes out,
yeah,
and
for sure.
We'll talk to you again.
Okay. Thanks
all right.
Very much.
Thanks
yeah,
a lot.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And please stay with us when we come back, because as I said, we have a changing guest today, Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum could not be with us today. She had an emergency. We're going to bring you what I was going to play to you next week, which is a pre-recorded interview with Julie Ziegler-Norman. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Terry with tsigns.com with a quick tip for you. Next time you're crawling through traffic, think of it as promoting your business on the road. Reach potential new clients with custom-designed vehicle graphics, from a classy removable door sign to a full car body wrap or a simple but effective window decal. We can do it all. We're a family-run business here to help new customers find you. See tsigns.com for a personal guarantee or call Terry today at 206-971-6800. Again, 206-971-6800.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicky St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicky asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk 1150. When you want to go to
it, relax, don't do it. And welcome back, welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And coming up next, we're bringing you a pre-recorded interview with Julie Ziegler-Norman, Zig Ziglar's daughter. You know, life changes for all of us unexpectedly. Quite often, we don't always welcome the change, but here's a family that has truly embraced the struggle. And Julie Ziegler-Norman is joining us today to talk about that. So I'd like to welcome Julie Ziegler-Norman to the show. Julie, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's so good to be here.
I'm very excited to talk to you because your father has inspired me on many levels, on many occasions. I first saw him in San Diego many, many years ago and was just really impressed. I think for anybody who's not heard him speak, they've missed a real treat. Tell us a little bit about your dad for those who don't know who Zig Ziglar is and what his work's been all about up until now.
Okay. Well, Dad is probably the most well-known motivation icon in America. And I say that very proudly. He has been, I guess, America's motivator, encourager. He is the most positive thinking, positive teaching person, I believe, of this past century. And I say that not from my experience, but from having read the letters of the people who write him. He talks about how to keep a good attitude, how to overcome your problems by looking at the facts and changing what you can and letting go of the things that you can't. He has written 29 books, 10 of them bestsellers. See You at the Top was his first book, and he had to self-publish that back in 73 or 4, because nobody could see how this positive thinking stuff would be of interest to anyone. And it has sold over 2 million copies and still selling well today.
It is. It's still on the shelves today. I saw it just the other day. So your father had, your book is all about how life changes. It's not necessarily worse, but it's different. And I want to just get a little background on what happened. 2 years ago, your father had a fall down the stairs. He landed on a marble floor, as I understand, and did some brain damage. He now has short-term memory loss. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, he got out of bed and didn't turn on the light because he didn't want to disturb my mother's sleep, and he likes to write down good ideas when he has them. But that night, for some reason, he just happened to step off the staircase that's right next to his office door, and his brain injury was so profound that he had done a speaking engagement that day and was just, you know, the Zig you know and love. And the next morning he had profound short-term memory loss, and the doctor said, you know, maybe the swelling will go down and he'll regain some of that short-term memory, but it just never happened. You know, and so what he was faced with was, am I going to respond to this or react? And what he did is he just started applying the principles he's always taught to his own life, and he just found another way to do the thing that he loves to do, and that's help people become fully who, you know, they're supposed to be.
Right. Zig says in the book, I'm 82 years old. That simply means that even if I'd not fallen down, I still wouldn't be able to do all the things I could do when I was 30. So I don't regret what I can't do. I'm grateful for what I can do. And I know gratitude is a huge part of what he teaches. And another couple of things that I think catch phrases that I've heard him say, and you talk about in this book too. He talks a lot about focus on what you can do, not on what you can't. Go as far as you can see, then go further. It's not what happens to you, but how you respond. How did the family cope with the change? Because obviously this affected everybody, not just your father.
Right, yes. There's always the, you know, the rest of the story. It would have been, you know, it's a blessing to have been indoctrinated to his kind of thinking all of our lives. And, of course, my mother has always been his biggest cheerleader. But we really did have to come alongside. I have been his editor for the past 16 years, and he can write up a storm. so he's had me fully busy. But I also took on the responsibility of interviewing him on stage. So I've been traveling with him since, I guess it's a little over 2 years now since I started doing that. And that has greatly changed my life because from sitting in the corner quietly editing books to being all over the United States and speaking in front of thousands of people at a time. But, you know, it's such an honor and a privilege to come alongside him, Vicki, and help him do what he does best because of the people's lives who are changed. My mother now travels with him on every speaking engagement. She had actually started that about 3 months before his fall. But so it's kind of neat family time. My brother picks him up 5 days a week and takes him to the personal trainer so that he can stay as physically fit. The doctors have told us that keeping his body as fit as we can keep it will also keep his brain as active as it can be. So my little brother, who's the president of our company, does that. And my sister, Cindy, we all take turns going on doctor's appointments, try and give mom a break, because she'll say, honey, I'm going to go to the kitchen and fix us lunch. And within a minute, he will forget where she said she was going, and he'll be up looking for her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes he might open the hall door to see if she's out there. And so, you know, we're with Dad 24/7, and thank goodness that his personality didn't change, and he's still happy and positive and great to be with because we're with him a lot.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge thing. And together you've written this great book. It's called Embrace the Struggle, Living Life on Life's Terms. I wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about why you put this book together. I know that one of the things your father said in the book was, you know, there are certain things I can't do, but as his work has always shown, he doesn't focus on what he can't do, but on what he can do. And he can still make a contribution to people's lives. What did you hope to gain from putting this book together?
Well, Dad is now a living example of all he has taught. And when we go on stage in front of all these people, many who have been watching him for years, and they can see that even though he is not the Zig Ziglar they knew, he still has the same attitude and the same philosophy in the face of, you know, this, some would consider this a tragedy. My father considers it a way to teach people from a different angle. Now they can see that he can be positive in spite of, you know, some negative dealings in his life, whereas before everybody thought, you know, it's easy for him to be up and positive. He's got this great career and everything's going his way. But Daddy just saw that, you know, when we're weak, we're strong. If we're willing to be vulnerable and show others with great transparency that you can do life on life's terms and you can find a way to still contribute, regardless of how small. But part of what we did when we realized that what Dad was going through was probably going to be the strongest material of the moment. He'd been writing a different book when he fell. We just mid-sentence decided to set that book aside and get started on Embrace the Struggle because we were able to write it as he was dealing with the things that came up. In the same way that he wrote his book, Confessions of a Grieving Christian, when my oldest sister died, he was just kind of journaling for himself in that case, but ultimately decided that maybe the way he worked through his grief might help others work through theirs. So it's what was going on in our lives, and we're doing it very publicly. You know, almost every week we're in front of an audience somewhere in the United States, and they can see that he's no longer running around the stage. He's not agile. He has a balance problem, and he will start to repeat himself because his short-term memory loss is profound. And all I have to do is say, Dad, we've already covered that, and then we'll go to another topic. But he is willing to let people see him as he is and see that he has not let this keep him down. And you would not believe the letters that we get, Vicki, from people saying that it has inspired them to go ahead and keep going, even though they had stopped maybe because they were having seizures or they weren't feeling well a lot of the time. It's just incredible, the feedback we're getting.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of quality of life is in the head, isn't it? My mother has Parkinson's disease, and there's a lot of stuff that she just cannot do anymore. And, you know, every day is honestly a struggle for her, but she has a very positive attitude. And I think quality of life comes from, as your father talks about, the people that we surround ourselves with, family, friends, and just being with people we love.
Right. Right. He calls that the home court advantage.
Yeah.
And when you have lived a life doing the right things and treasuring relationships with those you love, then when a day comes and you really need to be dependent and have help from others, they're all there. And everybody's so happy, you know, to finally be able to give back. And that's been what we've found with Dad. Everybody, he's been out there doing it alone all these years, and now it's a true, true blessing to get to come alongside him. But that attitude thing, Vicki, is, you know, he says you can't do anything because of a positive attitude, but you can do everything better than you would with a negative attitude.
Right, definitely.
So, mm-hmm.
And I know your brother, in the book, he said he used to brag, you know, hey, my dad's Zig Ziglar, and he can talk for 30 hours and never once repeat himself. So when you say that, you know, he has short-term memory, I mean, it really has impacted his life a lot. And it's very courageous, and that transparency is very courageous, I think. A lot of people would want to go behind closed doors, but I do think this book is really, really helpful. He does talk very openly about the death of his eldest daughter, your sister, about your alcoholism, your struggle, and your struggle with marriage issues. So it puts a very human face on somebody who's, you know, been out there in the public eye for so very long. And there is a tendency, I think, sometimes for people to think that, oh, well, they just have a gifted life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there is. And the truth is, we all know that each of our families, you know, we have our things. It was difficult for my mother at first when Dad started talking about their early years when he had to turn a car back in because they couldn't make the payment, the lights got turned out. But over the years, she got more used to being open because she would hear how us sharing our problems encouraged others because they could see our family coming out on the other side of it. And that includes stuff about my alcoholism, my divorce from an abusive, you know, situation. And our families just aren't that different. You can be very, very positive and still have really, really negative things happen in life. But the bottom line is, how did you respond?
Right.
And how did you get to that place where you could see further? And that's really what the book is about. And the people whose stories are included in this book, a large percentage of them were individuals who came up to us after we get off stage to tell Dad how something he said or something he wrote influenced their life for the better. And it's just amazing. I mean, I don't know if you read the story about the couple, the Van Buren's, who the husband had an affair, and the wife forgave him, and they have an incredible marriage today.
Right.
I mean, these are real people willing to put their name in print to say, look, we survived this, and our marriage is better for it. You can, too.
Your father, very much a religious man, very much into marriage as a commitment for life, and he calls his wife the redhead. He's always called her the redhead, right?
Yes, that's and, exactly right.
And I think when you got married, he said there are only two reasons you can come home. One is if your husband is abusive, and the other is if he's a multiple adulterer or something like that.
Right, a habitual.
Habitual, that's it. So he also believed in forgiveness.
Once or twice, you know, but if it just happens over and over and over again, it might become unlivable. But yeah, he was very pointed about those two things, because he had, in his own family, a couple of his sisters had been badly physically abused, and he also understood the problem of adultery, you know, when it just, there's no end to it. And that's not just for men, that's for women too. You know, it works both ways, but
right.
He's saying there is you can forgive, you know, a slip, one or two, and you should try. Because, I mean, people are doing that for a reason, generally. And if you're working on your marriage, you can usually work through it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Embrace the Struggle is about many topics, not just your father's the change in life and your family's change in life. But your biggest struggle with your father's fall, you say, was 48 hours after the accident. You thought your mother was having a heart attack. How did you cope with all of this going on at the same time?
Well, you know, that strong faith that my father has, he has helped all of his children find as well. And we really just had to trust God, because when you've got a mother on one gurney and a father on the other, you just have to have faith that it's handled. And the truth is we know that no matter what happens, we're going to survive, and we're going to work through the grief and anxiety of it. The thing is Dad has taught us, you stay in the moment, and you deal with the things you can, and you just wait on the things you can't. And if it's a fact of life, like his head injury, we learned over time was permanent. And then we just accept that's a fact, and so now how do we handle this? And it was surreal standing there in that emergency room with one on either gurney, you know. But Mom's anxiety just went so high when he fell that her heartbeat just took off, and they couldn't get it regulated, and she had had a heart attack the year or so before. And so it was a precarious situation, but my sister was there, and eventually Tom was able to get back to town. And, you know, we just were all there waiting and praying.
Right, right. You say in the book, it hasn't, I think I saw this on a video, actually, on your website. It hasn't always been easy to be the daughter of Zig Ziglar. You talk about, you said you were going to write a book called I'm Positive, I'm Miserable. tell us a little bit about...
Y'all said when I grew up one day I was going to do that.
Right, right. So tell us a little bit about what it was like to what it was like to grow up with this motivational speaker who was larger than life to most people.
Oh, you know, he was always so much fun and so happy. He was on the road a lot, as you can well imagine. He was a cookware salesman most of my young life, and by the time he became a full-time speaker, I was almost out of high school before his name started to really be well known. But his philosophy on life and about, I mean, we weren't allowed to say words like stupid, or we weren't allowed name calling. Love was 100% necessary in the house. And so when I became a teenager and came across some issues that were negative, I didn't really know what to do with negative feelings, because I knew that if I could just think right, everything would be right. And so in a way, I put almost too much pressure. I didn't have a full understanding of how this positive thinking stuff works. And so I began to berate myself at a probably higher than average level based on the way I understood the stuff my father was teaching about, you know, if you change what goes into your mind, you can change who you are. And I would listen to some good positive tapes, and then I would still be thinking negative thoughts, and I just knew there was something big time wrong with me. And unfortunately, the way I found to cope with negative feelings was alcohol. And I was a 30-year-old adult before I understood that some of the feelings I was having were just like sadness, because those, we didn't address the negative things. Maybe we were a little in denial. I just know we were so positive that, some of the negative things probably did not get dealt with like they should. But it all came out in the wash, Vicki. We're all right today.
Yeah, and I think his generation, I know in my family, his generation is very much about, you know, tough it up, suck it up, move on kind of thing. And I actually was introduced to your father's work by my uncle, who was, I don't know, about 40 years older than me. So I think there was that attitude about, you know, you make the most of what life throws at you. And as your father says in the book, you know, if you complain about your problems, you just find more to complain about.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so we didn't complain at our house. And for instance, if you got a headache, my mother would say, "Did you take some aspirin?" If you said no, she'd say, "Well, I don't want to hear about it then."
Yeah. Almost everything that I read in books today, and I read a lot of books for the radio show and for other projects I work on, but almost everything that I see in self-help books these days, motivational books, life improvement books, I've already read in a different format from your father's work, or from maybe somebody of his generation's work. Do you ever come across anything new out there on your travels?
Well, you know, there really isn't anything new under the sun. But what I find that's new and refreshing is people who just find a new and refreshing and different way to present the same ideas, because we're all such different thinkers in the way we perceive and digest information. Somebody might listen to Zig Ziglar and not get a thing in the world out of it, and then just be listening to a friend across a cup of coffee and have a life-changing aha. So I think the information doesn't really change, but the way it's presented gives people another opportunity to hear it for the first time.
Yeah, that's a good point. How do you think it's changed? You talked about how it had changed your work with your father. How has this changed your relationship with him?
Well, that's a good question, because we've always been very close. And with working on the books with him all of these years, he has always been one of those people who trust others, who have his best interests at heart. He's not one of those folks who's so proud of what he's written that nobody can make it better. He's always asked other people to help him be the best he can be, and it's no different on stage. Just being up there, I never, ever, ever aspired or wanted to be in the limelight or on the stage. But when they said he needed me, because it was easier for me as his daughter to interrupt and redirect him, we had had some other guys who worked with us for years, really wonderful men, who respected him so much they just couldn't interrupt. And Dad did not want to repeat himself on stage. So when they put me up there, it was never a question of do I want to do that or is this a life for me? It was just that I worked with my father. I have seen how he changes or what he teaches changes people's lives for the better, and it was just what needed to be done next. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, the big, big blessing for me, Vicki, is that I am spending precious time with both of my parents on the road. Most adults don't get that opportunity, and I had long been grieving the fact that I spent so much time editing his books that I never got to see either one of them. Now he's slowed down enough on the writing that we're able to be together, not just more on the road, but in town too.
Yeah, that is a blessing. I want to ask you about the redhead. Tell us what your mom's like. He talks about her a lot in all of the talks that I've seen him give. In all of his books, he talks about her. He says a couple of things he's grateful for now. One, I mentioned earlier, he's still grateful that he can make a contribution to people's lives, and he's extremely grateful for his family. He says in the book that if anything, this accident has brought me and the redhead even closer. What's your mom like?
Mom is, she is a fun lady, and if you saw her, you would never, never, ever guess that she is 81 years old. Her heart and her smile, her eyes, all, she's just vibrant and full of life. And I think what Mom and Dad have, and they were married 63 years, by the way, on Thanksgiving, the 26th of November.
Was how many years? 63?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
63. But I think what they have together is a sense of humor. They find each other extremely entertaining, and they both light up when one or the other comes in a room. We went and did Dr. Oz's radio show in New York and unfortunately ended up sharing a suite where I had one of those fold-down beds and
right.
There was no door between where they were, and the light went out, and a few minutes I heard whispering, and then I heard giggling, and then I said, hey, you guys, I'm in here. And this was just last year. You know, hey, you're not alone. And then they really started laughing. But they have always had a very intimate relationship apart from us children. My father took her out every Friday night for as long as I can remember, and they got a babysitter and left us at home. That was the primary relationship, and as long as they knew they were on track, then we'd be fine. But my mother, I've never heard her say anything that would tear him down or make him feel less than. She's just always been an encouragement. And I don't know how she did it, because he came home all hours from these trips, and she would always wake up to welcome him home and give him a kiss. And, you know, she would get up to tell him goodbye. She just invested her life in him and in us. And she was very shy when they first married. But, of course, with his lifestyle, she had to overcome that. But she is an encourager, and people love to be around her because Daddy calls her the happy hugger. She just hugs and nurtures everybody.
Well, she sounds awesome. And before we leave today, I want our listeners to know a little bit about you, Julie. We've talked a lot about your family, but you are a proud mother and grandmother of a son, three daughters, 12 grandchildren. And I read that you're writing your first solo book. You've worked with your father on many of these books, but you're actually writing your first solo book. How's that going?
Yes, it's going very well, and it's going to be titled A Growing Up Ziegler. And that's what people want to know, is what was it like growing up with a father like the one you have? Because they can only imagine that it was probably different in their mind than it was growing up with their father. And it's, you know, as a result of being on the road with Dad, I have been invited to speak now on many occasions. And I just go where I'm invited, and I don't know where it's leading. People are asking, did I have a book? So I'm going to do the book, and we'll see. But I've got a very different story because I like to tell people that Dad is kind of like the king of doing things right, and I'm the poster child for doing things wrong. He can tell you what happens when you make a good choice, and I can tell you the consequences of what happens when you make a bad choice. So between the two of us, we kind of cover the whole spectrum.
There you go. Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. And it's great that you are able to spend this time with both of your parents. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Julie?
I would just like to tell them that if they do embrace their struggle, if they will just deal with the facts of what they can change and what they must accept so that they can move forward and not look behind, that things are going to be so much better for them. Dwelling on the past is a waste of time and energy, but things will get better.
Yeah. And a website where they can find out more about you.
EmbraceTheStruggle.com, and there are links there to my site and my brother's. We have a community there where people can actually talk about their own struggles.
Yeah.
So EmbraceTheStruggle.com.
And there are also some videos, and you can see Julie, actually some of her outtakes from speaking. And you definitely have your dad's sense of humor, Julie.
Well, thank you, Vicki. That's quite a compliment. I appreciate it.
Well, I thank you so much for being.
I've enjoyed this.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it too. Well, thanks for being with us today. We'll be back next week on Conversations Live, and we'll be joined by Lee Gelb. She's one of two former corporate powerhouses who left behind a 9-to-5 working life for big business to pursue her passion for gemstones, jewelry, and humanitarian efforts. Please be with us next week. Until then, live well, live strong.